Welcome back to Jesse's Girls. I'm your host, Jesse Chambliss, and I have a true twink to twunk as our guest today to discuss one of the faggiest things possible. So without further ado, my guest, Austin Conkle, welcome to Jesse's Girls.
Thank you so much for that illustrious intro, Jesse. Very glad to be here.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, it's so great. And, you know, totally only half joking about you being a twunk. But Austin and I both saw Mariah's residency very recently, and I felt it imperative that we recap. But before we do that, I would love to hear a little bit about you, Austin, because you and I bonded over pop culture. And so, you know, who are you in your day-to-day? And, you know, what do you, like, where did this love for music and pop culture come from? And what have you done with that? And what have you abruptly stopped doing with that that I think you should start doing again with it?
Oh my goodness. A great series of questions there, Jesse. So I'll give the quick TLDR on who I am in my day-to-day and then how that relates to pop culture and the backdrop that we have in common there. So firstly, I'm just a girly who lives in Brooklyn from the South, moved here actually from Texas, although I'm not from Texas. Jesse and I had a cute little fun rendezvous in Houston while I was there and a great chance to get to see an old pal. But I'm originally from South Carolina. If anyone's familiar, if you aren't, that's okay. Not a whole lot going on there.
Never heard of it.
Mm-hmm. No, it's just below North Carolina for reference.
So in case that assists.
But went to school in Nashville, lived in Charlotte for a little while, went to Austin for a hot minute. I'll be back there for Memorial Day weekend. I told Jesse that. Jesse was like, that's not relevant to me. It's a 3-hour drive, but that sounds fun anyway. It's like if I told you I was coming to Boston, I was like, okay, that's fun. So it's very...
Drag very... me. Oh my God. Texas is huge. You could be driving for 10 hours and still be in Texas. I don't think people understand. Anyway.
You really could. I might as well have told you I was going to be in like Brownsville at that point, but
exactly.
El Paso. either way, just down the road in Austin. But in my day-to-day life, as I mentioned, I live in Brooklyn. I actually am the head of marketing at a queer app called Lex, which is where all of the girls, theys, and sometimes the gays get a chance to interact, find one another. It's a lot of fun. Basically, it's kind of like a Grindr or Her meets Reddit, if you can kind of understand that hybrid. It's a lot of like post first, group first, find your people first. If it's here, it's queer kind of vibes. And then get to know people on a more personal basis or a more intimate basis. You know, whatever personal and intimate looks like to you, second. Yeah. But it's a lot of fun. And very startup vibes, and we've grown a lot in the last year, and it's been a lot of fun. Wanted to jump over to here, something that I'm really passionate about, which is also queer people, queer culture, queer community. And then a little bit, I guess, about kind of the background of what Jesse was alluding to earlier, of what I abruptly stopped doing, but did temporarily, and then I can give a little bit of insight into even just why. So I had a TikTok presence for a little while, where I was the guy who did the finger pointy thing with a bunch of melodies of songs that sounded the same. And Jesse was actually the OG person who I saw do something that was very similar, talking about how a lot of the late 90s songs had similar kind of poppy hip hop beat style intros. Things like
shout out Candy Burris. Yes,
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. A lot of the like TLC, Pink, even some Mariah songs, thinking Ex-Girlfriend, like very much started out in that same
Rainbow
genre.
Let's go Rainbow Apologist.
Very much. Yeah. Let's go Rainbow Plug, album written in 3 months. Like, come on, Mariah. But I really enjoyed that phase. It was kind of a COVID like passion project in some ways. I lived in a studio apartment in Charlotte at the time, didn't have much going on. No one had a whole lot going on. So it was just kind of
huge
a nice escape.
Massive loser.
Uh-huh. Thank you. Everyone else was actually, you know, breaking
so
COVID protocol.
Yeah.
And yeah, when I said 2020, I meant actually it was 2019. Nobody was even on lockdown yet. I was just,
yeah, that's no, I'm wild.
No, I'm kidding, kidding. It was a really fun way to just kind of turn something that I was passionate into, yeah, into putting it out there. And then it gained a lot of traction. A lot of people were like, who is this blonde man with butter hair who is just like talking to me about music on my For You page for 60 seconds every once in a while? And that was me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that even stemmed from really even just growing up in the South and kind of knowing like, hey, these are these titans of the industry, these pop girlies that you can look towards that are really some of, not that they're even overtly queer in their presentation of a lot of things, or like at the time, that's not necessarily how you interpret it when you're a kid. But you're like, oh, this looks fierce. This looks more than my mundane day to day that I don't relate with at all. This looks like something that represents kind of just like an energy that you feel inside yourself. And so
liberation.
Completely. So back like in like
freedom. Mm-hmm.
So back in kind of like middle school, like 2011-ish, prepare to cringe, Jesse. I kidding.
He's a little younger.
I'm kidding.
It's a little silly. It's not a big deal.
No, that was when I really started to get interested in just like the charts, really kind of Britney's like return to the charts, like the, not that she was ever really gone.
When she became like a singles artist.
Exactly. Between 2008, 2009, that was when, you know, Womanizer 3, really, it was like, oh, she's all about the singles right now after the circus era was really successful. But then she had a slew of singles, and then obviously like Hold It Against Me debuting at number one, and then Till the World Ends being like one of her most successful singles in a long time. And I just found that really fascinating. I remember like the day that those songs even came out and like seeing like, oh, it's a big deal, this music video, this is Britney Spears, like I'm witnessing pop culture of somebody who I kind of grew up with that now I was like a young teen with. Who was really excelling. And I was like, oh my God, it's a big deal that she like debuted at number one. Like, what does that mean? And so tracking the like Billboard charts and learning analytics and all of that became really kind of integral to just like my escape in middle school of just knowing like, hey, I can be very in touch with pop culture. And I can, even if it's just like random stats of like, oh, I know that you Make Me Feel by Cobra Starship peaked at number 7, like who cares? Like, I don't know. But like it was relevant to my mind at the time. And it helped pull me out of, you know, that sense of like, it gave me a little bit of a touch of queerness in my everyday life, even though I felt like outwardly I was pulling so far away from that because it made me feel really uncomfortable and people were making fun of me for it. So it was a nice escape to like a nerdy way to kind of dig into that really has just stuck with me into adulthood. And even though it manifests in different ways now, it was really important. And so that TikTok foray into you know, music analytics was very, very cute, a very fun little era to me. That we could revisit at any point in the future. We'll see. And Jesse and I, Jesse was one of the people that was always pushing me to, you know, stay with it and just not care about what a lot of people are thinking, since it can be tough to put yourself out there, and kudos to Jesse and to everyone who does. But it was something that in the throes of COVID, I couldn't really handle all of that and needed a break. So, definitely something that I have a lot of respect for people when they continue to do it. But that's originally how we met, was just making kind of similar content, becoming TikTok mutuals, chatting, that migrated to probably Instagram, that migrated to text, and then eventually was our first Mariah concert together. So
yes, so Mariah has been a really important part of our relationship. And you know, Austin and I, we met, we'd hung out before, and then I was like, hey sister, like I'm taking Daniel, my boyfriend, to see Mariah's Christmas show in 2022. Like, you know, and then ultimately it wound up that we were going to stay with Austin. So we stay with Austin. We're not going to the concert together necessarily. We're both going, but we're just, you know, but we're staying together. You know, we prepared for it together. We went, we like walked to it, or, you know, did the public transportation thing together, to it and everything. Now I don't want to spend too much time on this. and I think I have made this abundantly clear on this podcast, that I am a Christmas hater. I dislike Christmas. I'm not a holiday person. I don't love Christmas music. I have about 27 songs that I can tolerate, and they're on a specific playlist, and that is all that I will listen to. When I hear it playing in the wild, it makes me sick. So I don't like Christmas, but I love Mariah. Now, I had seen Mariah's Caution tour and had a great time. And then I was like, I really want Daniel to be able to see Mariah because he never has before. And so I did this for him and, you know, planned this trip for his birthday. You know, we can just agree that something was off on that show. And not even really like the usual things where people are like, her voice, this, this, that. It was like the overall production, the organization of it. It was a little bit of a hot mess. So you know what? We're going to leave that negativity over to the side. And I'm glad to have seen her. It was cute. It was fun. But, she didn't seem like she was in her element. So, anyway, we're going to fast forward here. Now, before we talk about, and just so people know, Austin and I have not discussed anything about Celebration of Mimi, like our feelings, like anything. Because I knew I wanted to ask him to be on my show and because I wanted to recap it. And so I intentionally like did not ask him anything. And so this will be like a first groundbreaking conversation about this and our true live reactions with each other. But before we get into that, I want to know if you could just kind of briefly touch on, when did Mariah become a thing for you? Because, I mean, honestly, she's post your generation, or like pre your generation. You're post, you live in a post Mariah, you know, existence, really. You're what, 17, 18? And no, but honestly, like when you think about like 90s Mariah, like that, you were too young for that. So when did she become a thing for you?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. For the folks at home, I'm not 17 or 18. I was 17 or 18 during the like Me, I Am Mariah era. Oh my goodness. Yes, I remember listening to that entire album through. I feel like there's a lot of moments between me and Jesse that involve the flu. Point that we did not hit on earlier. I actually had the flu right before we went to see Mariah's Christmas show. So I thought the production was fabulous because all of the medications I was on really helped me see it more clearly. She sounded immaculate. Apparently she also did have bronchitis during our show, which was something that was later found out. But I had the flu in 2014 when I was listening to that entire album when it came out. I was supposed to be taking an AP exam, but instead I was laying in my backyard in 95 degrees trying to bake out the fever. So that was a fun little aside. It didn't work. I felt awful. But Mariah,
I wouldn't advise. Yeah,
no, but, I was traveling on that meteorite with Mariah, but I, OG Lamely status was definitely, in the Emancipation era. So partially that's even why I really wanted to go and see this tour. Since I have a sister who is about 4 years older. So she was just on the cusp of pop culture at that era a little bit more so than I was, since I was really 8 years old when this was all going on.
This is like me with Britney. Like I was like 8, 9 when Britney came out. And so, yes.
Totally. It's really that era is like, oh, you're still a child, obviously, but you're in kind of that third to fourth grade switch where you're like, oh, I'm starting to click with some things. I feel like my world is no longer like, you're much less like a kindergartner and first grader, and you're much more like a sixth or seventh grader in like that sense of just kind of general cultural awareness and development. And so my older sister, I would steal her iPod all the time when she wasn't using it. And she just had the whole Emancipation album on there. And so I remember specifically Shake It Off just feels so much more nostalgic for me. I'm not quite sure why. I think that it was just because we belong together in my mind to obviously as the like flagship hit of the album, I think was so much more attached in my mind to the single art. because it was the We Belong, the one with her draped over the chair. Like, that was the image that I had connected while I was listening to the single.
Got it.
Whereas Shake It Off was the Emancipation album cover. So I think that when I think of Emancipation, that's why I think of Shake It Off. Gotcha. And I would steal her iPod, and it was very like Kelly Clarkson, Mariah, even just like, I was going to say like The Fray. I think that might've been a little bit after that time. But just very like Daughtry. It was moving into kind of like, some parts, Carrie Underwood. It was very that era of, and Mariah was just one of the songs. Yeah. Like it was, I remember it was just like Shake It Off, We Belong Together. And then, like Be Without You by Mary J. Blige were just like three songs that I just absolutely loved. And I think that I'd never, since my parents were a little bit older, they really kind of exposed me primarily to songs from the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And even though obviously there's so many classics and so many incredible singers from that era, a lot more of just kind of the like artists who just blow, like artists who just sings, like just really the operatic style vocals that Whitney and Mariah and Celine and everybody popularized in the 90s just weren't things that I grew up listening to. I mean, you know, my
so it scrambled your little brain, right?
Exactly. I was hearing this and just going, oh my goodness, like this feels like I'm listening to a performance is the way that I could describe it. And it felt like, oh my gosh, I'm on the waves and I'm on the journey of this whole like vocal progression, but also listening to something that is like fun and re-listenable and short and snackable at the same time too. So I really, that whole era, I remember thinking even too, like once we got a little bit later into like 2008, 2009, I thought that Mariah was a like new artist, because I know I was like 11 or 12 by then and was just like, oh, like Touch My Body Obsessed. This is someone who is hyper relevant. This is not somebody who's in their 18th, 19th year of their career. And I remember even distinctly looking up and finding out that Mariah was a number of decades of anniversaries in, more than I thought when I had originally Googled when I was like 12 years old. And I was like, oh my gosh, I thought that this was one of my peers. And as a 12-year-old, I was right. So
eternally so.
Eternally so. But that was my initial exposure. And she just really got me hooked then. And that type of just operatic, just the melody of, I mean, even like kind of like Rihanna said, like Mariah's voice being an instrument just captivated me in a lot of ways that music hadn't up until that point. It was that, and then I listened to like Every Time We Touch by Cascato, which was equally iconic, but the vocals are not necessarily the standout there the same way that they are on We Blow Together. So it was really that was something that touched me. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's great. I love that. I love when people discover legacy artists at a different point in their career. It's always just like nice, especially because I'm always rooting for the girls, especially the girls who are like in, you know, past 30s, 40s or whatever. And, you know, they're just constantly vilified for just simply aging. Right. So that's always great to hear. And I've talked about this on previous Mariah episode, but, you know, I grew up just kind of like listening to Mariah, but like casually because she was just everywhere. And my first album was Rainbow. And just the gayest little thing I could have opened up at Christmas underneath that little tree. Right. But I didn't like dig deep and really become a lamb until like my early 20s. And I think it's just because Mariah just is so mature in terms of like her songwriting. Even though she was a younger person when she was writing some of these big songs that she's known for, it just always felt like someone older writing it, which is so hilarious because she is eternally 12, you know?
Precisely.
So she has this sort of like dichotomous existence of being a child, but also, you know, having this like wisdom in her songwriting that she's always possessed. And so anyway, I am just like, just throughout my, and you know, I'm being in my early 30s now and really like having dug into Mariah for like the last decade, I've really just like fully immerse myself. Like, she is in my top queens of ever, forever, ever, ever. Like, she will never be knocked off of that spot unless she does something just, like, terrible. And then I will just secretly, illegally listen to her. So, yeah, no, deep love for her just because of how impactful her music is. And so, you know, when she announced that she was going to do this Celebration of Mimi, an album that I didn't appreciate when it initially came out and then, you know, rediscovered later on in life, I was so excited and, you know, had to go. Daniel and our friend Emil went, and it was Emil's first time seeing her, so he was so excited. Daniel was ready to see non-Christmas Mariah, so he was excited. Yep. I just, like, was happy to be there, right? And did you look up anything before the show? Like, did you look up the set list or anything? Because I went in not fully blind, if you will, but I definitely, like, avoided a lot of spoilers.
No, because Jesse effectively sent me, like, a cease and desist, basically, after I had seen the show, because he did not want to hear anything about my takes, which I completely understood. I was not as able to evade spoilers as I think you were. I think a lot of my algorithms are highly curated to Mariah's. Anything with Mariah as a part of it was naturally going to be integrated into my TikTok and my Instagram Explore page. And sometimes I could not resist tapping on it and seeing what was going on. But yeah, so I knew,
so weak.
I couldn't do anything about it. My finger just compelled me to see what was going on. And then Mariah, I had posted a couple teasers of her own, of just a couple songs that she was giving some live snippets of, which were very fun and exciting to see. Mm-hmm. But I knew what a couple of the deep cuts were that she was going to do, just because I'd seen, and people were naturally posting, like, oh, we're excited that Mariah's doing this song for the first time, you know, it's in 19 years, et cetera, since the Adventures tour. But I hadn't actually looked at the official set list or anything, so I didn't know what the progression was going to be. I'd seen a couple of the fits, a couple of the ensembles, but I had not necessarily seen, like, the whole through line or knew a lot about, you know, her autobiographical take on it. So it was nice to get a chance to go in kind of partially blind, but having a couple of things, a couple of nuggets that I was excited for.
Yeah, no, I love that. So whenever we got there too, I think that I was really pleasantly surprised that she started, like, really promptly. I know residencies are a little bit different than, like, concerts, you know, they're a little bit more on time because they're there, right? Like, they're not just, like, traveling around getting set up and exhausted from travel and everything. So first thing right off the bat was she started, like, 15 minutes after start time. And I was like, honestly, work, because the concert I'd seen before that was Madonna, and, you know,
yep,
you get, you know, we don't need to say anything
we
there.
Know.
So she started with Vision of Love, and she really, like, does everything chronologically, which was not what I was expecting. So I was excited. I knew she wouldn't just play Mimi. But I was kind of into the chronological approach to things. Were you kind of like, eh, about that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I love the comment on the promptness too, because not that I was expecting her to be as fashionably late as can occur sometimes for events or gigs. But usually it's understood that an 8 o'clock start time often means about, like, 8:45, 9, especially if you have an opener, which of course at the residency she did not. But I went with my friend Jeremy, who was one of my friends from Charlotte who lives in Chicago now. And we got in line to, just grab ourselves a beverage just so that we could be ready for the show. And that was at about 8:01, 8:02. And we saw a countdown screen show up right behind the bar that we were grabbing our beverages from. And we were like, oh, we have plenty of time. And then we saw that come up and we were like, oh, is this really happening? Okay, work. That's awesome. And she was prompt. So I was very excited to see. Obviously Vision of Love is just a really fun song to start with. I mean, I don't mean fun in like a in like a boppable version, but yeah. fun in terms of just like it was what started her career. Everything. It is so quintessentially Mariah. I mean, mm-hmm. so many songs and ballads that she's done since then, understandably, have been compared to Vision of Love. Yeah. And it really was just kind of that song that like showed everybody that like, hey, you can be a powerhouse balladeer and still have a hits and like take the listener on a journey throughout this entire song that doesn't even seem to have like clear verse, chorus, bridge. And like, it can still blow everybody's socks off. So yeah. I was kind of pleasantly surprised to know that like, hey, this is usually something that is a little bit more of a closer or something that, you know, everyone's looking forward to, and knowing just like, hey, the curtain's up, she's there. We're ready to rock and roll with Vision of Love. I was like, okay, perfect. I'm locked in. And she yeah. made sure that we felt that way too. And I liked that. A lot of times I know that I expected her to start with hits like that. Mm-hmm. Just because that is the quote unquote kind of fire starter, as she said, that she's opened a lot of her shows with. And just hearing those first, you know, hits, and Jermaine Dupri just like getting on the track just gets everybody jump in. And this showed everybody, hey, this is gonna be a strong opening number that's going to have a like kind of pulsating energy and not like a party energy. It's going to be a like kind of a just kind of a regal celebration, if you will, yeah. as opposed to like a party celebration.
Yeah. And I think more of a celebration of life than just a celebration of like that album, you know, totally. Celebration of her career. So that was a really fun journey. It was like her, you know, her Eras tour, if you will. But she started off really strong. One thing that I really loved and appreciated, because you can't talk about Mariah without talking about her voice and where her voice is now and everything, right? Like you can't. She adjusted songs and made choices that sounded so good for her voice and updated them in a way that was like current to who she is as a singer now, but did not take away from the magic of the songs, in my opinion. And I thought that was, I thought that was just so refreshing, because I think like if you are a non-delusional lamb and you know, understand that she's not going to sound like she did when she was 20, like you can really appreciate her not trying to like struggle to sound that way. Right. And just to sound like the way that feels comfortable to her, because I'm never going to compare Mariah to anyone else. It's just not plausible. But like she's still eating the girlies up even with her voice right now, you know what yeah. I mean, like she just is. And I was so pleasantly surprised, and it felt like it was so well done and so well planned out and put together and, you know, polished, but also like we got moments that were a little more candid and sweet.
Totally. I feel like that it's so almost even just like cliche to the point of being popular again, to being cliche again, to the point of being popular again, to even just like compare Mariah to anybody. I mean, that's been kind of her entire cycle as an artist. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were, I'm sure comparing, I wasn't around to see it, but I'm sure they were comparing kind of mid 90s Mariah to early Mariah, to early Curly Mariah, if you will, in the early 90s. And that's, it's hard. I mean, even so frequently, you're seeing artists get compared to other artists, whether it should be, you know, valid or not. I mean, we don't need to talk about Taylor and Beyonce in the same space, in my opinion, necessarily. But I feel like a lot of times, Mariah is one of the few artists that is continually compared to herself. And I think that doesn't get talked about enough, because they're always like, oh, Mariah's not doing it like Mariah used to. It's like, okay, well, they're both Mariah. I was like, what other artists are you seeing the current version of them being compared? People are comparing their music sometimes. They're saying, oh, I liked this better than that one. Or, oh, this era is a flop. They're in their flop era. They're in their sophomore slump. They're in their fourth album, sure. slump, whatever. But yeah. I feel like that's always in terms of just like the commercial success. I feel like Mariah is one of those few artists that vocally has always been like, oh, she set the standard. So she's always compared to herself. And she's very rarely can someone authentically and honestly pit someone else. Not that you should be pitting the artists against each other, but put somebody in kind of that same echelon as Mariah vocally. And even when people do, I mean, they're comparing to her. They're not comparing them to themselves, because Mariah is just compared to previous Raya.
Yeah. No, and that's a great way to put it. Like, how could you compare her to someone else, really? I mean, even with a, you know, her contemporaries like a Celine or Whitney, you know, they're often called the vocal trinity, right? But I don't think that they were often compared in the same way that certain other artists are compared. You know, they were kind of three parts of the same thing and respected differently for what they were doing, because truly they were all doing something different. You know, like Whitney was just the a voice that will never ever be again. You know what I mean? And Celine is just like, just a, such a, I know they call Mariah the songbird supreme, but like Celine is a songbird. You know what I mean? Like she, you stand her up and you put her on a tree branch and just like let her wail. You know what I mean? Like,
and, I love that imagery. Yes.
But and like Whitney and Celine, they really never wrote music, and that's fine because they had the chops. Yeah. And so Mariah's thing was different, and it doesn't make her better or anything because she was doing that, but it did give her her own lane, even out of those three, where she was most likely compared, going to be compared to if there was going to be someone else, because she was writing and she did have an ear for production and she was trying to innovate in a way that I don't think, regardless of, you know, why, because there were circumstances surrounding Whitney and then Celine, I don't think wanted to, but like she was innovating in a way that other artists weren't, and she was pushing something forward, you know, with her collaborations, with the remixes, with a change in style, a pretty abrupt change in style, totally. You know, a decade into her career, right? Like, so it was nice to see all of that on display in a way as well. Doing it chronologically helped us to understand the shift and the fight for, you know, not only just relevancy, but also I think legitimacy, because despite her doing everything that she did in the 90s and all of the accolades and all of the hits, there's something that prevents certain, like a big chunk of the general public from respecting her. So it was nice to have that journey of everything that she's done and just to see it on display in one show.
No, totally. I think that it's easy to forget that she kind of faced a lot of skepticism from the outset. You know, I mean, that's why the entire MTV Unplugged even existed, was everyone was like, oh, she's just a studio recording artist. Like, LOL, let's see. They were back in 92, they were saying, Ishbowl, let's see her do it live. And I'm sure Jesse is rolling his eyes.
Gen Z, man.
Well, it's easy to think like, oh, this was just the 2001 challenges that then manifested in the emancipation in 05. Like, no, I mean, not to go through the whole litany of Mariah's challenges that she's faced, but I mean, like, it started out just being like, can she produce these vocals live? Then like, oh my gosh, the studio execs obviously feeling like, why is she dipping into hip hop? She's our just like pop princess balladeer over here. Mm-hmm.
Put her on adult contemporary radio.
Exactly.
Don't show your love for hip hop and R&B. Disgusting.
No. They said we can't have ODB playing on the, you know, 106.7, the B, Columbia, South Carolina station. And so that it's really fun to see. I know that this is similar to some of what she did with her residency, the number one to Infinity. Since she was going through, it's hard to go through Mariah's discography and not hit on the number ones. Since, you know, almost even like over half of what, like her entire charting discography went number one, which is crazy. Or she has what, like 27, 28 top tens, I believe, and then 19 of them were number one, which is just remarkable. It's not a bunch of songs that hit number 9 or 10 one week and then drop off the charts. It's songs that were all like pretty organic massive hits and
two songs of the decade.
Two songs of the decade. I mean, that's not gonna be replicated. I mean, it's not. It was, and they were completely different, like, genres even. I mean, you could put them into similar, you could both play them on contemporary radio, but I mean, like, they represented completely different eras of music. I mean, 1995 versus 2005, the radio sounded completely different. You know, one was people were going out and buying records and cassettes in the stores. And another one, they're by 2005, they're already buying it on iTunes. And so completely different eras. And then, of course, with the success of All I Want for Christmas Is You and her success on streaming, it's just monumental too. But yeah, I mean, I was glad that she started at the beginning and then got a chance to kind of take us through the journey to get to the celebration of Mimi and then really kind of peak with that too. So it was nice to hear a mix of the number ones, which we love, but then also, dipping into some of the other songs too. I loved her, musings, I believe, a few years ago of even just discussing like no number ones, like a concert series where she's just not allowed to do any of the number ones, which
I would be there.
I would absolutely be there for. There's still obviously all of the twos and threes that we can touch on, but yeah,
a concert of her just playing songs that she blocked herself from becoming number one.
Yes, there we precisely.
Go. Yeah,
that sounds great. Songs where she was, you know, the first solo female artist to occupy the top two slots ever on the Billboard Hot 100, and then of course no features, as she liked to do it, which we always appreciate. Let's not slide a feature. We love a feature. No. But she hopped on a feature recently, although there was other songs in the album I believe probably would have been a little better suited, but she did hop on a feature recently. And
interesting choice, but that's okay.
Interesting choices. Yes.
So I want to draw attention to, so obviously like what you just talked about, we ended with like a high note on Mimi and she didn't play anything after Mimi, which is fine. But it was like, oh, okay, we're done. I was like, oh, okay, bye sis. But I want to draw attention to my kind of like favorite unexpected moment, which was the whole like medley of songs from Butterfly that I never thought I would ever hear live in my entire life. So Butterfly's my album. And we'll talk a little bit more about some of your preferences here in just a moment. But Butterfly is my album. It's her magnum opus. She's called it that herself. And so I know it was a celebration of Mimi. Totally get that. But for Butterfly to get its moment was just so juicy delicious for me. Hearing like Baby Doll and Breakdown and The Roof.
Ugh. So good.
I know we only got snippets of them, really. It was a medley. But it was just so incredible to get that experience. Because, like I said, I didn't think that I would ever get it. Like, there were songs I knew I would hear, right? Even outside of Mimi. So getting to have that little sliver of an album that's really important to me, even though that album became important to me later on in life, I wouldn't call it nostalgia, but I still feel like it represents something that even I didn't realize was happening for me at the time, because that was my like 6-7-year-old self starting to understand my own music that I really liked, and like seeing the Honey music video on TV and, you know, My All and everything. And then later on discovering that the rest of the album was a masterpiece, you know. That was a really great standout unexpected moment for me. Did you have an unexpected standout moment?
No, I loved that breakdown of your analysis there. Not to be funny, but I feel like that's such a good point. I mean, a lot of her earlier years, you know what she's going to cover. She's going to do Emotions. She's probably going to do Make It Happen. She's started doing Can't Let Go a lot in 2019 and 2020. So we could expect that.
Another big moment for me.
Another song that should have gone number one and sitting pretty at number two and then pulled by the execs from a lot of radio stations. Quite silly of them. Exactly. You expect there's going to be probably like a fun I'll Be There moment, which I was really excited to see. That was one of just the playful snippets that I'd seen a lot of online before going. And, you know, then, of course, like you have the slew of Dream Lumber, Fantasy, Always Be My Baby. You know that we're probably going to hit on some of those. So I feel like by the time I'm glad that now she's dipping into more of like what that late 90s discography looked like for her. A lot of times I feel like even back in 2015, 2016, 2017, it was like, yes, it was the number ones tour, but it felt very much like, oh, we get Honey, we get My All, we get Heartbreaker, we move on. Sometimes we even get Heartbreaker and Honey at the same time. And that's
which we did again.
Which is fine because we got a lot more to chew on in between. Mm-hmm. And so I agreed. I really, really like Breakdown is just one of those songs that I'm like, there's so much going on and it's all really exciting. And
it didn't hit for me until I was older. Like, yeah. Truly, like the past few years, like I'd listened to it, but I was like, you know, but I really dug in the past few years with Breakdown.
It's layers. Great. It's so fun. I mean, it's Hermione's really, really, it's one of those songs that hit when I was a little older too. So I definitely appreciate that take and resonate with it. I think probably the most surprising take for me was probably I Wish You Knew. I think that I was like, okay, I expected if we're getting a celebration of Mimi, I thought like maybe we were going to get Circles. Maybe we were going to get Stay the Night. Like maybe we're going to get something like Get Your Number. That was a little bit of more what I was expecting. And so I feel like I Wish You Knew was just one of those moments that I was like, this, I was not expecting her to pull this one out of, out of the album. Since I thought if anything, she was going to stay a little bit closer to the songs that were kind of in the, it's like that style range, being a little bit more of kind of the like drummy hip hop, almost club leaning ones. And I Wish You Knew obviously is not that. So, that was probably the song that I was the most surprised she pulled out of the tool belt.
Yeah. I was a little surprised at some of the things she didn't play from the album. Like Stay the Night.
Yeah.
Mine Again. You know, I thought we were going to get a little bit more, but then I think about, I mean, she did play like 7 songs from it. And I loved we got a Don't Forget About Us moment.
Yes. I know.
It was so fun. Ugh. The audience freaked out whenever she played that.
Yes. It's one of the, when she made some comments about, I feel like she routinely does it with that song. It's almost like she forgets it went number one too. And then she always makes a comment of, oh yeah, I forgot this one was also a number one. I should probably add it to the list and sing it. And it's very coy in camp, but sometimes it almost feels like it dips into reality of like, does she actually remember this song too?
And so overshadowed in memory by the other big ballad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But We Belong Together is so good that I have nothing negative really to say about it. It just does overshadow some of the other like really good moments on the album.
Totally. I feel like Don't Forget About Us, like what stuck with me. I remember we had the single art of that song on the iPad 2. So the one of her kind of like in the all like brown beige couch kind of leaning over with her hair covering like half of her face. Yeah, I remember thinking that was so fierce. And
you said Slay Mama, the house down.
I did. I was 8 or 9 and I was like, who is she? And I wanted to know. And now I am here 20 years later, almost talking about how that had an impact on me at the impressionable age of 8. But yeah. I always just think back to that performance in 2014 of Don't Forget About Us when she was at the very end and it was like the music completely cut out and she just went absolutely for it and the audience went crazy and just held the note at the end and was just shaking that arm and was ready to rip the microphone away when she was done singing. And
I'm about to watch that clip again. Yes. I've seen it 3,000 times, but now I'm like, ooh, I want to like take an edible and just like watch a bunch of Mariah live.
Oh my gosh. I mean, really, even when you were talking about Becoming a Lamb a little bit later, I mean, I think that probably even I was a big fan in my younger years, but then obviously she didn't have a whole lot of new music between like 2009 and then by the time I was like later in high school. And so I think by the time she was performing live consistently and I could go onto YouTube and I could watch live performances that were like, oh, this isn't something that this isn't Tokyo Dome that I'm going back and watching. I'm watching something effectively as it is happening. And that was really cool because it felt like I was connecting to an artist who was like performing and injecting new sounds and new feelings and new just energy into hits that I had been hearing kind of just tacitly for a long time.
Yeah.
And then it was like, oh, I wonder what she's going to do on this one. I wonder if she's going to, what direction she's going to take this note. Is she going to do my all the 2003 version where she feels her body, feels her body, feels her body all the way down? I don't know. And it was just kind of a fun game to like guess like how is this going to go and what are some of the standout notes that she's going to hit on this one versus what are the ways that she's going to that she's going to lean into a little bit more of her comfort zone in this song and how's she feeling. And it was just really cool to feel almost like not really in a parasocial way, but very much like, oh, I'm experiencing this live. This is like a living legend who I'm getting to watch one of her shows virtually almost every single night as she's performing. And that was a really, really fun way for me to just kind of like reactivate and become an adult lamb and feel like, oh yes, I'm in college now. I can get a chance to see all of her great shows in my dorm room at night with my headphones on and just wonder what she's going to do. And that was really fun and just energizing.
Yeah. And you're reminding me too, really, of, you know, I mentioned obviously like in my 20s, I became more into Mariah, but I would say I took that like really big lamb dive, if you will, in 2020, because I was listening to comfort music and Mariah was a comfort for me. And I knew a lot of her albums, but I think that I like deeply fell in love with Butterfly during that lockdown time. And I was listening to Janet as well, specifically like Go Deep from Velvet Rope and like Velvet Rope era Janet. So Go Deep and The Roof were some of my most played songs in 2020 because I was like really digging in. And then, of course, like reading her memoir too really, really added a lot more texture to The Roof and, you know, just that time period for her. And so I think that sort of like rebellious desire for like sexual liberation and like bodily autonomy and everything really resonated with my sensual self. And so as I learned more about that, like in depth from her perspective, it it like really like drove it home for me in terms of my lambdom.
Oh, I love that. I have
lambdom.
Copy of Being a Mariah Carey on my books bookshelf right behind me. So very much the same energy. I was so excited when The Rarities came out, just getting a chance. Oh my goodness. I somehow, because I know that Spotify Wrapped always just includes through, I believe, October. It's like October 31st. And The Rarities came out like very soon before that timeline. Yeah. And somehow Cool On You was still like my third most listened to song of 2020.
Because taste.
I remember it was because all the other songs were from the beginning of the year. They were from Future Nostalgia. They were from Chromatica. They were the songs that we got a chance to really have marinate and revisit throughout the entire year. And I remember somehow Cool On You snuck into like the top three. And I was like, how much am I listening to this song for it to be able to make it into like the multiple hundreds of rounds within the span of a month? And it managed to do that. And then All I Live For was on there as well. One of the, oh my gosh, my absolute favorite, even before the album, I mean, my deep cut that I never thought I'd be able to hear the studio version of, other than just like a buried down deep 13-year-old YouTube link, was Always Slipping Away. And the fact that she even the fact that she just did live snippets of it in 2019 and 2020 and, oh my goodness. I mean, really just one of those songs that's so ethereal and just feels so like Underneath the Stars, Melt Away, slipping Away. Like those just take, like your body just reacts, like you just sink into the song.
Yeah.
And it just, the layering, it's just lush. I mean, it's hard to describe it any other way. And that was such a fun era, even in the throes of COVID, knowing like, hey, we have some new old Mariah music that we can get a chance to listen to the studio versions for the first time and really sink into. And clearly I listen to it a lot. So,
yeah. And she did the like dressing room performances with that, right? Is that what you're talking about? Like,
yes.
JoJo, did JoJo sing Slipping Away with her? Was it JoJo?
JoJo did, I think, Everything Fades Away.
Oh, that's right. She did. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I mean, both incredible tracks. So.
Yes.
I could have, I mean, I would have taken JoJo doing anything with her. That's her mother. So, okay, before we move on to some lightning round Mariah stuff, any other final thoughts about the show? Like, was, for me, it was top tier.
Yeah, I mean, it was only my second time seeing Mariah in person, and it was my first time not having the flu seeing Mariah. And so I was very lucky too that I was on it on Ticketmaster the day that they went live. Jeremy and I had a budget and we said we're going to get pretty close, and we did. And it was really, really nice to see her just feel pretty comfortable. I mean, even just like bouncing around, having a little bit of banter with the audience. Like, I feel like at the Christmas shows, sometimes it's a little bit less likely that you get that because there is so much production value going on. She's coming down on the moon. She has the Nutcracker dancers. And I feel like this just felt a lot more stripped down. And there was just
so comfortable.
Yeah. We missed, Heidi Klum, and Tyra Banks. They were there the night after us. And so they were there on Saturday and we were there on Friday on the 19th. And so we were like, oh my goodness, that would have been really, really fun just to get a chance to have a little campy moment with them being up there doing her glam moments. But, so we missed that, but, it was still just, it was fun. I mean, it felt like we were just watching Mariah. It didn't feel like we were watching this high budget Christmas production. It felt very much like, oh, we're here to sit in and lock in and have her take us through her autobiography and her voice and then give us the glimpses of the moments of what that looked like from a music perspective. And that was really nice. So I definitely felt like, oh, the show is done now. Fly Like a Bird is done. Oh my goodness. I am kind of leaving on a high, which is awesome. Yeah. But it was very much like, it felt very cleanly closed from start to finish. I mean, Vision of Love to Fly Like a Bird really just was a really nice pairing that I don't think I'd ever put those two together in the same slots in my mind. Sure. But they are such similar songs in terms of the vibes that they give you and the kind of the transcendent nature, of course, of the climactic moments. And so, I really liked it. I mean, it was clean. It was, she, you know, was there again 15 minutes after the bell rang. And I was so ready for so much more. I wish it could have gone on for hours, but I know that can't always be the case. Mariah needs her rest too, even as a night owl. So I hope she got to sleep until the afternoon the next morning and was fully ready to blow the roof off the place on Saturday.
Love it. Great synopsis analysis. Nice way to kind of like wrap up our concert experience. Basically, we loved it. Rave reviews. If you are a person who enjoys Mariah in any capacity, I would encourage you to save your pennies and go see her because she announced another round of dates and I think it will be really worth it for you listeners. Now, Austin, I'm going to put you on the spot just for a few little fun things. We've got a little bit of time left.
Okay.
So, there's some typical questions that I could ask you, but I'm going to do them in true Jesse fashion. And you are allowed to ask me anything as well, too. We don't have to go back and forth, but if you think of something you do want to ask me and put me on the spot, you are totally allowed to do that. So don't worry.
Okay, I'm ready.
But my first question for you is, what do you think is Mariah's cuntiest song?
Stop. Oh my goodness. Cuntiest. Okay.
I know. You gotta think about this one.
I would say, not just because I mentioned it earlier, but I would have to go with Get Your Number, to be completely honest. When the image, when she's even just like in the pre-chorus, when she's just like rapping, mm-hmm. and she's just like talking about how she's dipping in with the bubbles filling up, like that is just so fierce. And then even the music video, I don't think got nearly as enough fanfare as it did. I mean, when she's with the big phone and she's in the club and her fits were just like so fierce. I mean, that's honestly one of the songs that I will routinely introduce my friends to when they're like, oh, I don't think of Mariah as like an up-tempo artist. And that is one of the songs that I like. It's like, that is fun. But it feels kind of just like slinky and more like packaged, but I feel like Get Your Number is just kind of like, I don't know. She just feels like she's having fun. And I feel like she sounds so sensual in ways that I'm like, ooh, I just kind of want to like dip into the bath and just like in the middle of a party and just kind of like let it take over me, which is cute. So that's what I would say, but I didn't know. If I'm allowed to pose the question back to you, I assume you've probably thought about it longer than I have.
Yeah, you can. You can come up with your original. You can throw them back at me, whatever you want to do. I think for me, personally, her cuntiest song is Migrate from Equals MC Squared. It's one that I listen to a lot. I wish it were slightly faster.
Yeah.
It's a little too slow. If they would have like sped up the BPM just like a little bit, I feel like it would have been like fierce, but it still goes so hard. And I think like particularly where she goes to feature my hips accentuate my
situate my
instead of tits. Like, that is so cunty. I love that song. And if I'm like wanting to just like rub up and down my wall, like in my room, I'll just like put on Migrate and I'll just like vibrate on my wall.
Oh my goodness. Like smack that into just like any listening service and bump it up to like 1.15x speed and you are ready to go. It is literally slinky the house down. The fact that it even charted at the time too, when like most non-singles weren't doing that,
should have gotten the full single service anyway.
I agree. But that was fine. We gave it to Bye Bye and that's all right.
Anyway.
Well,
we don't talk about that. Okay. We're going to do a little Fuck, Marry, Kill.
Okay.
Album edition.
Ooh.
Okay. And then we're going to do a little Fuck, Marry, Kill with a singles edition.
Got it. I'm ready.
Fuck, Marry, Kill. Debut album. Emancipation of Mimi. And we'll do, Music Box.
Okay. I wasn't sure how easy you were going to make it on me. I feel like I would have, even a year or two ago, probably said Kill Music Box, which maybe is a controversial opinion. But that was mostly because I just associated it with the hero of it all. I was very much like, okay, this was not a song that Mariah even wrote for herself. This song feels this whole album. I don't love the song Music Box itself. And I was like, Dream Lover feels kind of like it's in its own lane. And then I have been hooked on Now That I Know for a while now. And so I think that I would still have to kill Music Box, but it would be a much more remorseful kill than it would have been a while ago. I feel like it's pretty easy. I feel like Mary debut, Fuck, Emancipation. I feel like that's the right answer. Because debut is just like, yes, everything was a lot less polished at the time, but that was just kind of, it felt very like crisp, ready to go. It felt very much like this is a solid package that knows who it is and is ready for commitment. Whereas Emancipation was kind of all over the place in the best ways. And it was exploring so much with genres. I feel like I would have much more fun in that with Emancipation than I would with debut or with Music Box. Music Box is already dead in the corner, but Now That I Know is still playing on loop, at the funeral, so I'll take that.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah.
Now we're gonna do a singles version.
Okay.
I'm pulling up my phone so I can remember because it's always something with her. We're gonna do number ones specifically, but we're going to do number ones that maybe aren't what you initially think of when you think of Mariah. If you are a local.
If you're a pleb.
So Love Takes Time. Okay. And then we're going to do One Sweet Day.
Okay.
Because for some reason, despite that being a song of the decade, it's not an enduring Mariah song.
It's not. I know.
And then Touch My Body.
Ooh. Oh my goodness. There's so many different ways to potentially approach this question. I know it's blasphemous that you would say lesser known Mariah songs and then include Touch My Body in there. But I feel like
hold on, let me pause. I don't feel like Touch My Body has necessarily endured in like maybe, social media culture. Like another later song of hers, which isn't a number one, but like Obsessed. I feel like Obsessed gets like more attention because I kind of pair those two together because they were lead single, like for the first albums. Yeah. I feel like Touch My Body's kind of like forgotten in the current culture. poisonally. So that's why I included it.
Okay. Okay. Yes. If you're using it juxtaposed against Obsessed, and then just charting at the time, I can definitely see that. We need Miss Girl crying on TikTok dancing to Touch My Body back in 2019, and then we'll be good to go for the Touch My Body renaissance. But to get to the Quick and Dirty, I would probably kill Once We Day. Mm-hmm. To be completely honest, again, I know that it was the song of the decade. I know that Boyz II Men and Mariah were just some of the biggest artists ever at the time, you know, have some of the longest, like they're both artists that have multiple songs that have like 12, 13, 14 weeks at the top. And then they had the longest running number one single for 23 years. I get it. I don't really like the song, to be completely honest. I will, if I'm listening to Daydream, it's a skit. It is. And I'll listen to it the first time around if I'm going back and doing it multiple times, or if I've heard One Sweet Day in the last couple of weeks or months. I don't need to revisit.
Yeah,
that's just kind of the way it is.
This is your truth.
It is my truth. And at this point, I think that I have to use the same logic. I would fuck Touch My Body, and I would marry Love Takes Time. I mean, they even. It's kind of in the name, isn't it? I mean, love is going to grow in the marriage. And sometimes I just want to touch the body and consensually have a great time. And you know,
this was a ploy for me to hear how you felt about One Sweet Day versus like,
really,
you know, A Love Takes Time, you know, or something like that, that people don't talk about as much. But
yeah,
I mean, I listen to Love Takes Time a lot, but
I like Love Takes Time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty good. I know that she kind of just like, pulled it out of nowhere because they were like, oh, we just need like another ballad to kind of close out this album. And like, Mariah was like, sure, I can just spin one up. I'm like 18, 19, 20. I'll just create a number one song that I'll write in my bedroom in like 30 minutes. So I know that she isn't as attached to it. But it's really, I don't know. It's really fun. It just feels a little bit more anthemic. I think that a lot of times it gets comparisons to Vision of Love, but like structure wise, they're pretty different. So I feel like, I definitely would. I would, the one song from that era that I'm not going to probably, that I would also kill, not to, that they're catching strays, but I don't want to cry, just can catch some strays right now, because it's not necessary. Yeah.
I don't need no, it's fine. I agree with you there.
No, I'm like, I don't want to cry either. Moving on.
Yeah, I don't want to cry. I agree. So like, let's keep it moving.
Exactly.
What is a Mariah music video that immediately comes to your mind when you think about a Mariah Carey music video? Like, if someone's like, Mariah Carey music video, like, what comes to mind for you?
Yes. No, I'm going to answer this, and then I have a question for you too, because you're not getting out unscathed. Coming to me, the easy answers, I think, would be Honey or Heartbreaker, just since obviously Heartbreaker was one of the like highest budget music videos at the time ever. And then Honey was just her breaking free and diving into the pool. Was very much like, that's very easy. Mm-hmm. I think, honestly, it might even be It's Like That, which I think is kind of like, I think that the music video, in my opinion, is better than the song. I really like the song's energy, but it's not like a go back and repeat and listen to. It feels a little bit empty sonically to me sometimes, but I think that the, I wish that it had a little bit, which is surprising compared to, you know, all Mariah's entire rich history of discography, but the music video, not trying to give the actual song some strays to catch here too, but I like her walking down the stairs like in the like glittery gown and just looking to the left and right as she's saying the lyrics is just so fierce to me. And I mean, it was just really just her standing with the fan and just, you know, rubbing her arms and, you know, saying that she's lotion. I was like, wait, she is lotion.
She's actually wet.
She's exactly. I was, she's like, I am moist. Suddenly moisturized. I was like, those chickens are ash and you are lotion. And I'm wet.
I want to get that tattooed on my ass.
Ooh, I think so.
I don't think I have enough ass for that.
I wasn't going to make that comment, but I'm glad that you came to the same conclusion. But I think...
What's your question for me, Austin? Escape me.
Oh my goodness. Everyone's catching strays today on the podcast on Justice Girls.
Escape me.
My question would be, so as you've alluded to as well, I think something that really just speaks to like Mariah's enduring nature is that so many of her songs almost annually become memes or become a viral song that someone dances to. We had the About My Face to Lego Blocks Harvard University moment recently. Again, another very cunty song. Last year, It's a Wrap was so big. I feel like Legitimately Obsessed was like one of the first major like TikTok dances that even just kind of helped kick off the platform. And it's kind of hard to even just think about modern culture without a Mariah song at some point just being pulled randomly out of her discography and being a part of that culture. So I was wondering if you had to pick like any Mariah song and you were like, oh, these lyrics are really campy, or some this would be really fun for a challenge or a dance or something, that you would pull out and say, people need to know this one. I'm comfortable with it becoming common core. And what would that song be? Bit of a tough question. That's why I gave you a long lead in and time to think.
And time to think. You know what? I'm going to go off the rails here. Are you ready for me to go
The rails? I think I am. I'm locked in.
I'm going to pick Ex-Girlfriend.
Okay.
I'm going off the rails and I'm going to pick Ex-Girlfriend because I think it fits with that like thing that we were talking about earlier, like the songs that kind of have that like harpsichord thing, you know, that sound and that kind of like very specific production. I think that it would be kind of silly for people to realize that she has a song like that stupid and kind of like, I don't know. It was a little clout grabby for the time, you know, like to just put that as a filler song on the album. But I loved it personally as a 8-year-old. That was my like go-to like revisit. And so I think simply for younger Jesse, even though I don't remember the last time I ever listened to that song, I'm going to pick Ex-Girlfriend. But since we're talking Rainbow, my top Rainbow song is Bliss.
Yes.
Because I just want to hear her moan for like 5 minutes.
Effectively, yes. I also love Ex-Girlfriend. I really like how much, I think how much is sonically, it's kind of predictable, but it's still fun. Like that predictable doesn't, I'm not using that in a pejorative sense here. Like I think that Ex-Girlfriend's a little bit more sonically interesting. But I like looking back, like, yeah, it did kind of sound like a lot of other things going on at the time, but it's still a good song. I mean, I feel like it's
like an okay song.
It's wow.
Even though I love it, I love it. You know, but when you compare it, if we're comparing Mariah to herself, right? Like it's an okay Mariah song.
Yes, that's fair. I think that personally, I think that the verses are a lot more interesting than the chorus.
Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, the verses are really fun.
But it's a lot more. Yeah.
Now that you bring up how much, I did make a TikTok about this one time because of that sample that Jay-Z and Beyonce would eventually use for 03 Bonnie and Clyde.
Yes.
Mariah had already done it. And then it was a throwback to Prince. I mean, it's so layered. You know what I mean?
So storied.
Like, it's so storied. It's so layered. There's so much rich history and context.
So much more.
That song fits into that people probably don't even realize. So I might post that TikTok that I did. But anyway, yeah, it's a man, justice for Rainbow.
Yeah, really. She was out here inventing homosexuality before anyone else was. And
for her to have this like pride, you know, merch easy grab from her photo shoot, like her marketing mind, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And also one of my first things that I remember in terms of like a visual representation of Mariah, because I know it came a little bit after Honey and I'd seen it, but I didn't really connect like who Mariah was as a, like a little baby, you know, when all of this music was coming out, like I knew, but I didn't know. And so one of my first like visual cues for Mariah that like really sticks out for me is the Heartbreaker music video, and not for the, you know, the Bianca of it all. It's actually for the choreography in the pink top at the very beginning, the soft choreo. Like that was my standout, like Mariah visual as a child, like one of the first ones for me.
That's such a good scene. I mean, obviously, like, hand on chest, pumping. But I was really struck by, like, her eye contact with the camera and almost, like, pouting. Like, her mm-hmm. eyebrows almost slightly raised. And she's just very, like, this yeah. is another Tuesday for me.
Mm-hmm.
Which I is really cunty. I mean, it's just
so cunty.
It's fierce.
And the boobies. Just the boobies.
Yeah, I know. And her just, like, without even looking, just putting her hands and jumping back onto the counter. And just,
I
like,
love that. The yeah. athleticism that we got from her in that moment.
Oh my, goodness. God. Yeah.
And I mean, of course, the jeans. Like, you have to mention the jeans.
You have to mention those. Yeah, yeah. She should have, I mean, she should be paid for every single person who did that for the number of years after. But,
yeah. So she
That's
cut,
just
she
my
cut
take the, and hers.
Yeah. She cut the top of her jeans off for that music video. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you've never seen that music video for some reason, like, you have to just look at the jeans. Just
yeah. the jeans. She basically invented the low rise. And that was just because she cut it off before the music video in a spur of the moment decision that changed history.
It did.
Yeah.
But anyway, this has been so fun, and I know that we could do this for 6 more hours.
Yes, easy.
But I want to thank you for being on here and for answering my little questions and, you know, talking about our experience. And I'm really glad that as the fans that we are, we both got to experience this residency and, you know, that we can just send each other little random Mariah things. Sometimes I appreciate your friendship and really glad that you were able to come on here. So thank you.
No, me too. Thanks so much for having me, Jesse. I know that we've bonded over lots of different things, but I know that Mariah has just been kind of a storied part of our relationship together too. And she's got songs for every moment, whether you're trying to party or whether you are legitimately, you know, going through a vicious cycle of personal exploration and challenges. If you need to make it through the rain, you can. Mm-hmm. If you think, you know, you're that chick, you also are,
you
and
also
that's
are.
Okay. And we have been both of those things, and we'll be both of those people again in the future. So I'm glad that we have been able to share that together. And thanks so much for inviting me. I would talk about Mariah for, you know, till the cows come home, till the lambs come home, if you will. That's right. We did not need some onomatopoeia there, but I'm really glad.
On my own show.
You were going to catch strays till the very last second of this bit, friend. But
wow. Yeah. Kind of like those stray hairs, those flyaways you got going on. Anyway, no, my hair is disgusting right now, so I don't do a video podcast. But no. Okay, everyone, we will talk to you next time. Thanks so much. Bye, Austin.
Bye, Jesse. See y'all.